people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing, be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You running down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, of course. Those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. So much great, interesting news. I'm not necessarily all great news, but interesting news. I'm going to get at that right moment, right now, and always good to hear from somebody showing some leadership. And of course, when people talk about talk about actually doing something about the third world invasion, sets the what's the current term? It triggers. That's it. Triggers the politically correct. So here's an Estonian member of the European Parliament. He calls for a final solution on what refugees... Oh, my God, final solution. Oh, you can just about hear the howls now. An Estonian member of the European Parliament has demanded a final solution for Syrian refugees who break the law in Europe. In an apparent echo of language used by the National Socialist regime during the... that's not the word I'm going to use. Okay, final solution simply means let's just get this thing settled once and for all. Now, whether or not Adolf Hitler used that or exactly what he might have meant by it, and actually I shouldn't leave it that vague. Hitler simply wanted most of the German Jews expelled into Eastern Europe, not into gas chambers. Anyway, well, yuck, Madison. I'm a member of the European Parliament for Estonia's right-wing Conservative People's Party, made the comments in a Facebook post discussing news reports that a Syrian refugee
had attacked a German with a sword in Stuttgart. Madison said the report reflected a new Europe and a new Germany, before adding in German, and I'll give you the translation, a final solution is required. Estonian politicians condemned Madison's remark. Well, let's never mind the way he phrased it. Would you not agree that lawless refugees from lawless parts of the world, raping German or other European women, assaulting German and other white Europeans, has got to stop? There has to be a final solution to that. He is not suggesting that these people be, you know, put into, you know, what they want called concentration camps and executed. That's not what he was saying. Anyway, I think the public's tolerance for these attacks on free speech is wearing rather thin. This is one of the most insightful and in some ways funniest columns I've read in a very, very long time. And this is by Rex Murphy. It's in today's National Post. And it absolutely skewers, eviscerates an absolute prize gang of hypocrites. The very wealthy who have swanned off to a very exclusive resort in Sicily to discuss climate change and basically to preach at the rest of us. Anyway, rather than try to summarize Rex Harrison's commentary, I will give it to you directly. Today's text is from the Gospel of Matthew, King James Version. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. In other words, you look good, but you're rotten inside. Every issue has its hypocrites, those who preach the cause but act its opposite. But there's no issue on this orbiting earth, nor has there been, has there ever been, that has the burden and depth, the volume and intensity of the rawest hypocrisy that burns on the flames of hypocrisy itself as that of global warming. The hypocrisy of politicians is a bead of sand, a pimple in the shadow of Everest, compared to the hollow fake piety of the mega-rich and the famous gospelers of global warming. Those howling loudest at the people to use public transport, for the planet's sake, of course, should not, for example, own $400 million yachts, travel themselves by private jet, have a dozen vast mansions in a dozen countries, and hold suppers that cost $100,000 in ancient Greek temples. But they do. Check out the Google summer camp. And
this is what Rex is going to discuss. And it really is hilarious.
This week, the richest of the rich, the famousest of the famous, the most pretentious of the pretentious, convened a three-day summit in a high-luxury resort on the island of Sicily to discuss, bemoan, illustrate the crisis of climate inflammation brought by fiendish fossil fuels. It was sponsored by the two founders of Google, personal worth in 2017, about $81 billion U.S. The chosen ones gathered to save us all from a humid world was a rare mix, including Woody Harrelson, the actor, Diane von Furstenberg, David Geffen, Chris Martin, Leonardo DiCaprio. He was the discoverer of the Chinook. Sacha Baron Cohen, Orlando Bloom, Katy Perry, Prince Harry, and a clutch of egotist billionaires and trendoids too numerous to list. How do I save thee, Earth? Let me count the ways. How did this coven of Illuminati get to Sicily? Did they walk and row? Come by Greyhound? Hitchhike? No. Official count of the private jets wafting into Palermo Airport for the Grand Consul stands at 114 private jets. You know, all of them just guzzling fuel. You know, that's emitting carbon dioxide, which is supposedly raising the Earth's temperature. It's not, but that's what we're supposed to believe. This is a maximum, this for a maximum of 300 people attending. That would be three persons per jet. Not all came from the carbon-rich sky, though. Some came by personal super yacht. Eric Schmidt, the CEO of something called Harbor Freight Tools, came in a 69-meter, that's, you know, like almost a football field, luxury barge, Intrepid, costs $150 million. A New Zealand tycoon cleaved the Mediterranean on Andromeda. That kit costs $165 million. And David Geffen floated in on Rising Sun, which cost $400 million. These are not self-propelled bathtub toys. Outside of aircraft carriers and high irony, supertankers, none want oil more. Super yachts are vultures, gluttonous for fossil fuels. They can be rivaled only by the excesses of private jets, flying thousands of miles to hold meetings to persuade the poor of the world to cut down on the consumption of fossil fuels. It's impossible to mock this. Al Gore selling his failed cable television network to Kuwait for $300 million. Originally purchased for only $12 million, was but a bend in the road compared to this full-on racetrack of hypocrisy. Jonathan Swift, the great satirist of the 18th century, resurrected to satirize Google Camp, would look on this and return to his crypt, dejected, despairing, and defeated. A few highlights. It's reported that Prince Harry gave a barefoot speech. Now, this is strange, writes Rex Murphy. In my experience, speeches don't even have feet. I expect what was meant was that Prince Harry was barefoot when he gave the speech. though how that supplemented his faltering eloquence is difficult to discern. Unless going Tom Sawyer or Robinson Crusoe while staying at a $2,000 a night resort, gave the russet prince and fellow Googleites a frisson. the world savers rented the temple of Hera, and she was the goddess of childbirth and scourge of mistresses, in the 2,500-year-old Valley of the Temples for an evening meal, which cost U.S. $100,000. That's for about 300 people. Not everyone can light up a UNESCO World Heritage Site for private supper, while be yodeled at by a pop star. What, I wonder, did they have for breakfast? Fabergé eggs on nightingale tongues? for a little sightseeing, high-fuel 200 grand Maseratis were available for all. And just obscene luxury and wealth. Guzzling, well, you know, the very product that they say is causing global warming. It isn't, but that's what they say. And all to preach at us, and I guess to feel good. To their credit, there were no plastic straws, silver tubes embroidered with diamonds is my guess. I guess this high-class global warming missionary retreat wiped out in a mere 3 days the presumed benefits of Canada's useless carbon tax. 10 such summits and the earth will barrel into the sun. Not from overheating, from perfect embarrassment that it shelters such a band of plutocratic Uriah Heeps. It comes down to this, writes Rex Murphy. Those who most harangue and harass the rest of us on our carbon usage are the greatest wastrels of all. They own numerous mansions, live in palaces, like Prince Harry, travel on private jets and yachts the size of Sweden, burn money by the bucket load, and toss more of those fatal carbon emissions into the air than any single person since Saddam Hussein set fire to the oil fields at the end of the Gulf War. The great maxim of Glenn Reynolds, the Insta pundit, was never more richly illustrated. He said, I'll believe that it's a crisis when the people who claim it's a crisis start acting like it's a crisis. The motto for Google Camp, hypocrisy, thy name is global warming. Whited sepulchres is too kind. It's a very, very dramatic writing and absolutely bang on this issue. I think we should ruthlessly call the hypocrisy of these people at every turn. You know, they trade in preaching and guilt. You know, they want to make you guilt you into all sorts of sacrifices that they have no right to ask us to make.
Here's an interesting story. Something called Equal Voice. It's a group funded by governments and some big businesses to try to help women have a greater role or impact in politics. Okay, I think things should happen naturally, but I suppose if people want to band together and try to promote that, I guess that's their business. Anyway, this outfit called Equal Voice is facing all sorts of delightful internal problems. An organization aimed at supporting women in politics is facing backlash. I don't like that term, you know. It always strikes me as a pejorative. We do something, and if somebody, or not, I shouldn't say we, the globalists do something, and if you object, it's a backlash. No, it might be a perfectly legitimate reaction to something that's wrong. But anyway, okay. Things are not going too well. So it's facing a backlash over its decision to fire three racialized employees last week, sparking resignations and a social media campaign calling its commitment to diversity into question. I love it when the revolution eats its own. what is a racialized, racialized employee? That's a new word. Well, not really new. It's been around, I'd say, for about 5 years. I began noticing it. And first I wonder, well, what's this the euphemism for? Or, I mean, what are they really trying to say here? a racialized minority. Well, it turns out it means a non-white. Well, why not say so? A mark of political correctness is its absolute inability to call a spade. If these are non-whites, and that's what they are, of course, then why not say so? Why are they racialized minorities? It's like something's happened to them. No, that's what they are, or who they are in this case. Okay. Now, apparently this protest after the firing of three of these non-whites is calling the commitment of Equal Voice, its commitment to diversity into question. Ooh! Well, why should anybody have to be committed to diversity? But anyway, okay, let's get into the guts of the story. Equal Voice, a multi-partisan organization, whatever that means, dedicated to getting more women elected at all levels of government, had four members of its board of directors resign in recent days as young women have been tweeting about what they call negative experiences from the organization. Oh, negative experiences. I'm not sympathetic. Well, I'll show you why in a moment. That online conversation taking place under the hashtag NotSoEqualVoice has included stories shared by young women who were delegates at the Daughters of the Vote conference, which brought 338 young women to Parliament Hill this spring, and it was a disgrace. So that they funded 338 likely young women from, I think it was from each of the political ridings in Canada, and they went to Parliament Hill, and they were received by the Prime Minister and Leader of the Opposition, and a big fuss was made of them, and many of them behaved badly. The fallout began after three young women, Shanice Steele, 26, and Sherry Wong, and Lila Mumuni Chuasi. Yeah, these are the racialized ones. Anyway, non-white. Okay. So these three, they were all 23, were dismissed from their jobs at the National Organization's Ottawa office following months of tension and issues with management. love to see these outfits fall out among themselves. Eleanor Fast, as in a synonym for quick, Eleanor Fast, Executive Director of Equal Voice, said she cannot comment on internal human resource matters, but she defended the organization against allegations that their identities played any sort of role in terminating their employment. In other words, they're not fired because they're non-white. Now, in this day and age, it would be pretty hard to believe that, especially with such a social justice warrior type of organization. But it's always a good accusation, isn't it? If anything goes wrong for a non-white, it's racism. Quote, the staffing changes had nothing to do with anyone's race, ethnicity, religion, Fast said in an interview. The insinuation in that regard is completely false. Nevertheless, she said, she's concerned about the online discussion, adding that the organization is working on how best to learn from its mistakes and be more inclusive. Be more inclusive. An organization, they only had at least three employees who were non-white. What do they have to be more inclusive for? They already were. And these ones weren't working out too well. So they want to be more inclusive. She said Equal Voice wants to take the time to get it right and has hired a senior advisor to work on the issue. I mean, with your board of directors and your senior management, you can't figure it out for yourself? The Ottawa is absolutely rotten with consultants. Consultants is somebody who couldn't actually run a business himself or herself, but it's going to tell others how to do it. It's okay, the senior consultant to tell them how to... if they're spending their own money, okay, whatever, we can have a laugh. Unfortunately, I think they're spending ours. Oh yeah, they are. Equal Voice works closely with politicians from all parties and receives its funding from big business, the labor movement, and other sources. It also received, it's the other sources that interest me, it also received $3.8 million from the Status of Women Canada, that's the government project, for a project aimed at expanding leadership opportunities for young women, for which the organization committed to using an anti-oppression approach. What the is that when it's home? So the what are they calling themselves? Equal Voice is going to be using an anti-oppression approach for what? To expand leadership opportunities for young women. What's this mean? An anti-oppression approach. Women aren't oppressed. In fact, this organization, I would imagine, if it's functioning ideally, will be helping ambitious young women who want to get involved in politics at the municipal, federal, or provincial level to make helpful contacts that would help them move ahead in politics. I would think that was what it means. But they're going to use an anti-oppression approach. That just sounds like more belly aching and complaining instead of getting with the task and maybe trying to find out
how you might, a young person, a young woman might get involved in politics to perhaps eventually run, that they're going to be filled with resentment about oppression. A spokesman for Mariam Monsef, the Minister of Women and Gender Equality, said the department is aware of the situation but cannot comment. that's right. They can never comment on anything where they actually would have something useful to contribute. I'll come back to Mariam Monsef because she's another disgrace, and I won't, but anyway, she's not commenting. It's not the first time the organization has grappled with the charge that it has failed to take the needs and perspectives of women and gender non-conforming people from all backgrounds into account. Well, wait a sec. It's an organization that's going to try to help women become more involved in politics. All right, I can understand that. But it has been charged before that it failed to take the needs and perspectives of women and gender non-conforming people from all backgrounds into account. I think parsed down to its actual meaning, what the gripe here is that they weren't sufficiently sensitive to gender non-conforming women. What does that mean? I think it's LGBTQ stuff. I mean, it's supposed to help women. If somebody's screwed up as a man but thinks he's a woman, or a woman who's a woman but thinks she's something else, I mean, did they have to take all that into consideration? Can they not find one relatively functioning female in each of the 338 federal ridings in Canada and assist them to be more involved in politics? Oh, yeah, well, so they're not sufficiently sensitive to the gender non-conforming, that is, it's actually messed up. Or women of all backgrounds. Okay. The Daughters of the Vote event in April saw dozens of young women turn their backs on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau as he addressed them in the House of Commons. Others walked out when it was time for Conservative leader Andrew Scheer to speak. I remember that, and I don't think I commented on it at the time. Frankly, those badly behaved, rude, spoiled little witches should have been put over somebody's knee and given a good spanking, or sent home, but put out on the street and told, look, you've so misbehaved, find your own way back. You're out of the program, you're out of here. You know, I'm no fan of Justin Trudeau's, and I think it's perfectly proper to protest in the right spot, but they were paid for invited guests. If they didn't want to come, they could have boycotted because stayed away. But to turn their back on him or to walk out when the opposition leader speaks is appalling. The National Observer reported that several of the young women who took part in the protest said they faced open hostility for doing so and did not receive enough support or accommodations from Equal Voice through their experience. Well, you think they faced hostility? Yeah, because whatever else they had in their stuffed feminist little heads, they'd never learned manners. And that there is a way to protest. As I say, I'm no fan of the trust fund kit, but if you've been paid for to go there to experience Parliament Hill, to meet people, and you, out of your own narrow-mindedness and selfishness and stupidity, turn your back and insult the speaker, you're just no-account trash. And we're not even sure what it was they were protesting. The latest development has raised the question of whether Equal Voice can continue to straddle the line between supporting all women in politics, no matter what their ideologies or hot-button issues such as immigration, while also satisfying stakeholders who want the organization to pick sides. So instead of being nonpartisan, that there's some pressure for them to be partisan. Here's Executive Director Evelyn Fast. Fast said she does not see a conflict. We may support women who have different views on the world than what we believe in at Equal Voice, in terms of our commitment to our employees and stakeholders and those that take part in our programs, and there's no issue there. I'm not sure what she's saying, but the three former employees said their work at Equal Voice had included a push for greater cultural competency they felt was not being taken seriously by the organization's leadership. Each describes relationships with managers that were fraught with tension. Oh, well, okay, girls, get used to it. That's the workplace. So the boss quite often is not the nicest person. Emails the women provide to the Canadian press show the situation devolved after a dispute over flexible working arrangements, especially after the executive director, Fast, raised the issue of activities during working hours, including streaming television shows while in the office. So these were behaviors in the office, and they were admonished not to do them, and so nobody's going to tell me nothing. The three former employees said they viewed her comments as contributing to an unsafe and inequitable work environment. An unsafe environment? They were told, apparently, that they weren't supposed to watch or perhaps make television, it's rather vague, podcasts while at work. Okay, so there's a behavior they're not supposed to do. Well, anyway, when they were told that, they claimed they felt unsafe. This is the snowflake culture. If you in any way cross me, I'm feeling unsafe and vulnerable. Well, get used to it, sweetheart. That's the real world. Just because you've been told you can't do something doesn't mean you're unsafe. It just means you've got to change your behavior. So they felt unsafe, and they were in an inequitable work environment. again, a struggle to try to figure out what it is that's even being said, or what is meant by what's being said. An inequitable work environment. Well, inequitable means unequal. That might be. In most work environments, there is the boss and there are the employees. And, you know, if you want to keep your job, you pretty much have to listen to the boss. It's not a mass democracy meeting, and there's usually an authority structure, regardless. But anyway, they were upset at that. Then last week, Steele, that's one of the dissidents, published a social media post that she said referred to Fast, without specifically naming her or Equal Voice, as an ignorant white colonizer. I usually don't use words like that, but the ungrateful colored bitch. So she refers to her boss as an ignorant white colonizer. Well, you know, if you publicly say that about your boss, in most organizations, you'd be terminated. I was in the education system until considerable Jewish lobby pressure got me fired after a 25-year career as an English instructor. And much as I might have had nothing but contempt for the Negro who was the head of the board of director of education, I would never have thought of going online or elsewhere. Well, this would be back in 1997. Well, we're just on the edge of the internet age, but okay. Writing a letter to the editor, let's say, or something like that, and putting into words what I thought of him, or my principal. You can't do that. If you feel that strongly, then you resign. So anyway, what she called was, she called her boss an ignorant white colonizer. Now, I'm not sure if she's black or not, but if I called her a stupid black bitch. What would that be? Well, racist, racist, and sexist too. Yeah, the whole nine yards. She refers to her as a white colonizer. What arrogance. This woman, I wouldn't know this, the spokesman for the organization, Evelyn Fast for a hole in the ground, but she didn't colonize Canada. She was undoubtedly born here. Now, this is not a colony. Canada was built by the European founding settler people. And to call her a colonizer, now call her, you know, ignorant, well, I have no opinion on that, whether maybe she is, maybe she isn't. But those are specific racial insults. Of course she deserved to be fired. Steele, oh yeah, okay. Steele, who identifies as an Afro-Indigenous woman, said she stands by her statement. I was not aware that calling someone white was a derogatory term. She's being a little too precious by half there. It's not that she called her white, which Fast undoubtedly is, but she called her a colonizer. You see, the problem is these people have been indulged in their ideology of victimhood for far too long. But, you know, when they bring that into the real world, they're going to insult people, and they are insulting people. So she's an Afro-Indigenous woman. Again, having to try to parse that out. Well, what does it mean? I think it means she's part Negro and part Indian, Native Indian. The other two women shared the posts on their own social media accounts. All three were fired shortly afterwards. So, okay, the other two mirrored her comment, and they too were fired. Because you cannot publicly insult your boss. I mean, that's just not the way things are in the real world.
You can't. Yeah, you can, but if you do that, there are consequences, and they're probably not very happy consequences. You know, the boss is likely to fire you. That's the way the world is. Now, these precious little snowflakes who've been so indulged now are having to deal with the behavior with the consequences in the real world, and they're not very happy about it. I'm glad that they were fired, and I think that this really shows what the cultural Marxist training of their propaganda about victimology. I mean, it's one thing to say these things, it's another thing to believe them. And I suspect these three racialized, that is, non-white women actually believe that they were somehow oppressed. Well, you know, it's laughable, but it's also insane. They were oppressed. How were they oppressed? They were given special privileges. They were allowed to work in Ottawa. They were funded by. They hadn't earned these positions. They were funded by taxpayers' money and the government. And here they are. In full dudgeon. Oh yeah, here, this is very, very interesting. I thought you would enjoy this, and this is my final item today before I take my musical break. Climate change head scratchers, and this is by Gwyn Morgan, and he was the former chief executive officer of Encana. With energy and the environment playing an important role in the upcoming fall federal election, Canadians face starkly different policy positions
from political parties, together with a bewildering array of information and disinformation. Here is my rather eclectic list of little-known facts, head-scratching paradoxes, and utter hypocrisy. Climate emergency. On June 17, the House of Commons passed a motion declaring a national climate emergency. Firstly, there's no such thing as a national climate emergency. Climate change is global, not national. And Canada's contribution to global carbon dioxide emissions is a minuscule 1.6%. Here are some of the answers to some of the questions that will help you assess whether there's really a climate emergency. Apocalyptic projections of rapid sea level rises are driving municipal and provincial governments on both the east and west coasts to implement sea level rise plans that include sterilizing waterfront from development, building sea barriers, and even buying out and destroying homes that are deemed vulnerable. So just how fast are sea levels rising? Here again, the scientists provide us the answer. Despite all the calamitous rhetoric, sea levels continue, quote, to rise at the rate of about 1/8 of an inch, or 3.2 millimeters per year, 1/8 of an inch a year. So that over sea levels will rise 1 inch in 8 years. At that rate, a house built 10 feet above the sea level today would still be 9 feet 7 inches above sea level 40 years from now. in other words, the global the crisis turns out to be a big nothing burger. I'm going to continue from that list on the next program. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I've been playing this fellow lately. I'm going to play him again tonight. Known as the Possum, George Jones from Beaumont, Texas, a great singer, entertainer for so many years, and passed away a few years ago. Among his many other accomplishments, he recorded many really good duets with a number of women, including a woman who would be his wife, and who was with him in a pretty tempestuous relationship for a number of years, Tammy Wynette. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. And here's the Possum, George Jones. And you're on WhatResistanceRadio.com.
She ever
keep saying you love him. I believe that it's true, and it just doesn't matter how much I love you. But in time you'll understand, dear, when you shed a tear, then you'll know you were living in your tender year. In your eyes there's a love light that's shining for him, but how long will it stay there? Will that love light grow dim? You can just see the happiness, you can't see the tears. It's true, 'cause you're living in your tender year. So if I can't be your first love, I'll wait and be your last. I'll be somewhere in your future to help you forget the past. And you'll know that I love you, the love that's sincere, 'cause I'll wait till you're through living in your tender year. Yes, you'll know that I love you, the love that's sincere. Yes, I'll wait till you're through living in your tender year. I've been living a new way of life that I love so, but I can see the clouds are gathering and the storm will wreck our home. For last night he hugged you tightly and you didn't even show. For I've been watching you from the window up above. You must have thought that I was sleeping, and I wish that I had been. But it's best to get to know you and the way your heart can see it. picture that I carry. One we made some time ago. If they ask who's in the picture with me, I say just a girl I used to know. Just a girl I used to go around with. Just a friend from long ago. I don't tell them how lost I am without her. I say she's just a girl I used to know. I say she's just another girl now, just a flame that lost its glow. And I say her name has slipped my mind now, and she's just a girl I used to know. Girl I used to spend some time with, just a friend from long ago. I don't talk about the nights I cry without her. I say she's just a girl I used to know. Yes, we must have it out. feel tears welling up, calling deep inside like my heart's from a big break. And the stab of loneliness is sharp and painful that I may never say. You might say that I was taking it hard since you broke me off with a call. But don't you wager that I'll hide the sorrow when I'm a great right down and bald. Now the race is on and here comes pride at the backstretch. Heartaches are going to the inside. My tears are holding back. They're trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. True love stretched for another's sake. The race is on and it looks like heartaches. And the weather loses all.
Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. You know, like resistanceradio.com.
The maple leaf forever. God save.